There are only 15 players in the history of golf that have won six or more major championships. What did these people have that was different from other people? It's a thing called it. I played with many people when I was young. They were much better than me, but when it came down the line of major championships and big tournaments, I beat them. Why? When I started weight training in 1953, even Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus said, "You can't do weight training. It'll ruin your golf." But I'm the only man that's won the Grand Slam on the regular tour and the senior tour. I've won more tournaments than any man that's alive today. I've won more national championships than Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Rory put together. But my legacy is changing the lives of people due to the fact that I experience what it is like to have nothing.
Legend, welcome. I'm Scott Radford. This is a Performance Hackers podcast. And first off, I just wanted to take a few seconds to thank you. Now, you may be here just for today's guest, in which case, fair one. I'll keep this one short. But if you've tuned in before, I really do appreciate it. You don't have to give a new early stage podcast a go, especially with so many huge celebrities out there now flipping out a show left, right and center. So to find this podcast and to make it one of your go-tos means so much to me and what we're able to do against all the big boys out there. This next guest being testament to that. Now, today's one of those pinch me moments as I get the privilege of sitting down with an idol of mine and one of the greatest golfers and sportsmen to ever live, Mr. Gary Player. Gary won a total of 165 golf tournaments worldwide, more than any other man, including 9 major championships, and was the only player to win the career Grand Slam, that's all 4 majors, in both the main and the seniors tour, something that he talks about in the podcast as being one of his defining achievements. He's one of my idols not just for his achievements in golf, but his energy and his longevity and everything he's done over the last 70 years. His foundation alone raising over $100 million for the underprivileged. He truly is the ultimate example of high performance. But let's be honest, you didn't tune in today to listen to me. So without further ado, welcome to the Performance Hackers podcast, Gary Player. Gary, what were some of the biggest early influences or moments from your childhood that would help us to understand a young Gary Player pre-golf?
Well, first of all, I had a very, very difficult childhood because my mother died when I was 9. My father worked at a gold mine, 8,000 feet underground. My brother went to war with the British in the last World War at the age of 17. He left high school. Can you imagine? And my sister was at boarding school. But I went to a very English school, which saved my life, really, or played a vital role. We had the crown on our cap and our jacket. You had to dress with a tie every day, stand up, and the teacher came in the classroom. You said a prayer, and they had libraries, debating halls, gymnasiums, the best track, rugby fields, cricket fields. People spoke 4 languages. Incredible school called King Edward VII, which I visited just the other day, which was really remarkable. And then my father, in spite of the fact he's working on the gold mine, he gets to play golf for £25 a year, and he asks me to play golf, and I'm playing rugby and cricket and other sports at school. I said, not for me, that's a sissy's game, I'm not really interested.
How old were you here?
Probably 14. 15. So I said, no, not for me. But anyway, I reluctantly went, and the best thing I ever did, obviously. And, you know, what an epic journey I've had, having traveled more miles than any human being ever in the history of the planet. And the people I've met and the experiences I've had, it's been unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Going back to your early days and it being quite difficult, but yet having that contrast between the family life that was a challenge and difficult, but yet the school that was the other side of the coin, by the sounds of it, quite luxurious and privileged. What was that like? How was that to marry up?
Well, the school wasn't luxurious. In those days, it's a public school. It's a public school. We went to school those days was about £10 a year. Now it would be, something like £10,000 a year now, because obviously with inflation. And you're talking about, a long time ago, 70 years ago or more. So No, but it's Johannesburg, where I grew up, was a wonderful city. Not now. There's a lot of crime, and, you know, 45% unemployment. Just not the same place anymore. There's no law and order, which is a shame. It was the greatest living country that I'd ever seen in my life. But let's hoping we can get some new leaders coming up and can possibly change things. At the moment, it's not doing as well as we'd like to see it do.
You mentioned a statement somewhere. You said, I always wanted to be different from other athletes, and that you were interested in trying to increase your vocabulary and improve your speaking and be good at speaking. Like, where did that come from? Because that's probably not on the minds of lots of budding sports stars and athletes out there.
Exactly. I mean, I think the command of the English language is not very prevalent with athletes. They're renowned as poor speakers. But I blame the managers. The managers should be, you know, even my father, who was poor and left school at 15 years of age to support his family. He always said to me, read and try and speak well. And then obviously my all-time hero was Sir Winston Churchill. And I was so fascinated by his command of the English language, his wit, besides his leadership. Must be the greatest leader, certainly in the last 150 years, maybe all time. I don't know about Caesar. I don't know about the Trojans. I don't know about William the Great. I don't know about Napoleon. I've read about him, but I've experienced Winston Churchill. So that makes a vast difference in one's life. But it's very important for young athletes to speak well. If you want to endorse, well, if you want to be representing different companies, you've got to dress well. You've got to shave every day, and you've got to be able to have good manners. Manners maketh a man. So, but there's today, there's so much money in athletics that people don't worry about that. They spit on the field. They spit everywhere. They don't shave. They don't worry about dress code. You see some of them get on airplanes. It's disgusting. But it's a changed world. It's a vastly changed world now. And you see the things they're teaching in schools as compared when I was young. I'm so pleased that I lived in the time that I lived in. But when in Rome, do as the Romans do. That's what we've got to live with now.
How were you able in the early stages of picking up golf to differentiate yourself? Because it was quite a quick trajectory from what I hear.
Scott, you know, there's a little thing called it, and it's indefinable. And I've always said to be a superstar in golf. Everybody uses the word superstar and great so loosely. To be a superstar, you've got to win six majors or more. And we were doing some debating and search the other day. There are only 15 players in the history of golf that have won six or more major championships. What did these people have that was different from other people? It's a thing called it, indefinable without being repetitive. We have many debates. We have not come to the conclusion. I played with many people when I was young. They were much better than me. But when it came down the line of major championships and big tournaments, I beat them. Why? Why in my life I'm very calm. I'm full of love. I'm very much like Churchill, very much a crybaby. Tears are a good message from God. So I'm not ashamed to cry. I've been, as I say, very patient. But the minute I got on the golf course, it was like something just switched on and I became irritable, tense. And all the sportsmen that I've seen excel, most of them have been irritable. If you look at Tiger Woods, he's the best example. I mean, he and I were very similar. We didn't know our wives. We didn't know our children. And when you play 4 days of competitive golf and you win by one shot, that's a quarter of a shot a day. So you better be focused. So what it does for you gets you focused. And I'd come off the golf course and I was a different person. Now, why is that? There's so many things about the human. We haven't scratched the surface of the human being. For example, there's somebody who's born right now in the last year that'll live to be 150 years of age. You young people will see things. There'll be extrasensory perception. If I'm in South Africa and I want to speak to my daughter here in America, you won't need a phone. There'll be a chip in your body, or you'll just speak to her. And people say, well, you're talking nonsense. Well, There was a man who had elephants in South Africa, sent them to Iraq. Iraq had their war. He got in a boat and brought them back to South Africa, put them in their natural habitat. And they absolutely adored this man, part of his family. He died. They walked 30 miles to his house, walked around his house for 2 days, and then went back to their natural habitat. They didn't know anything about SMS. So that's a very good example of the kind of thing that's going to happen with a human being. So it's just as there's been such a change, and change is the price of survival. If you look at how golf, for example, I've been saying, I said on BBC to Peter Rallis, 25, 30 years ago, I said, Peter, one day there's going to be somebody hit the ball 400 yards. He said, absolute nonsense. Now I'm telling you they'll hit it 500 yards. Saw a man the other day hit it 460 yards. I said somebody would win a major at 50. Now I'm saying somebody will win a major at 60. You see, one of the biggest improvements in the human being now, very few, the majority of the world suffer from obesity. So obviously you can't live a long time. No wonder they're getting cancer, heart attacks, and all the diseases. So the great secret to living a long time and performing well is to undereat. People talk about exercise. Yes, it's important, but undereating is 70% and exercising is 30%. Everybody thinks it's the other way around. So the human being is going to change now. Again, when I started weight training in 1953, even Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus said, you can't do weight training. It'll ruin your golf. Well, we've seen what, if now they've got a traveling gymnasium following the players. They're all using weights. Well, not all, but the majority. If you look at Rory McIlroy, who's got the best swing in the world today, I've got a feeling he's going to win the Masters this year. I keep saying that, but he hasn't won a major, I think, in 10 years. He should have won the Open at St. Andrews this year without a question. So I'm just hoping he'll win the Masters to be another Grand Slam winner, which will be a great feather in the cap to have somebody from Britain as a Grand Slam winner. But it's so many things. It's having the right mind. It's loving adversity. I think that's the greatest asset an athlete can have, particularly a golfer. I'm speaking in terms of a golfer, to love adversity, because golf, when you're playing tournaments, from the minute you tee off to the time you end, is pretty much adversity. Maybe not to the extent of some other examples. But stress. I keep hearing people say, oh, I can't. The stress. Everybody puts such emphasis on stress. I love stress. I think stress is good for you. Who can live without stress? I'd like to meet the human being that has lived that doesn't have stress. Whatever you do. So make the best of it. Don't feel sorry for yourself and get in and work. But that's another thing, the work ethic. How do you get a young boy today who lives in the West with our culture? How do you expect us to beat people that are in China and other countries where there's no freedom and work and have it? See people win $4 million in a golf tournament? You think that they're not going to work twice as hard as us? The work ethic is something that we've got to try and maintain. There should be we're incentivized, as Lee Kuan Yew, the great leader of Singapore, the best run country in the world, he put great emphasis on incentivization. Well, what greater incentivization can you get than to play in a golf tournament and win $4 million if you're a golfer? That's more money than Arnold Palmer and I won in our golf careers on the regular tour together. But money wasn't the criteria. We didn't play for the money. We wanted to be the best. And at the time, there wasn't that amount of money. It was sufficient. And we made our money afterwards in endorsements. And today I make more money at the age of nearly 88 than I did when I was world champion. Representing companies like Rolex, Berenberg Bank in Germany, PXG, golf equipment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we never ever thought that would happen, but here it happened. And so it depends on your timing. But the work ethic is something that is very, very important. And there it is in front of you. You have the choice.
Where did the work ethic get instilled in you from, do you think?
You can't work these things out, Scott. There are opinions about a lot of things, but nobody really knows. I mean, the fact that I came home from school an hour and a half in a tram and a bus, got home and there's nobody there, dark house, at the age of 9, had to cook my food, make my bed, lay in bed every night crying, wishing I was dead. I had one wonderful black gentleman who came in once a week and helped me a little bit, get organized in the house, helped me tidy up, etc. So I think having that adversity was the greatest gift bestowed upon me ever. So everything from then onwards, as I grew older and started to play golf, it was almost downhill for me compared to what I had as a youngster. So I had already had the grounding of determination, of patience, of loving people, of having a good faith, of exercising. Because my brother, before he went, prior to going, he stood in our garden and said, "You want to be a professional sportsman? You're too small, you're too weak." And he bought me a secondhand set of weights. And he said, "Will you practice and work hard at this for the rest of your life?" Which I've adhered to and still work out, still push at nearly 90, 300 pounds of my legs, hundreds of sit-ups, run the treadmill at max, all because I sleep well. I laugh a lot. Laughing is a youthful cell that spreads throughout the system and helps keep you young. I sleep 9 hours a night. I try and under-eat. That's the hardest of everything. But there are ways and means of living to a long age. And so I try, and I've got at least five things that I work on every day to try and reach that 100.
You're literally the epitome of high performance, which is why I was so excited to speak to you today. Going back to the mental side of it, because you mentioned it a little bit, how you loved adversity and stress. Was there a time in your career where that wasn't the case, where you were struggling maybe mentally?
Yeah, I think that's something, you know, it's like learning arithmetic at school. You know, it's a process. You learn more as you go on. If you read a lot, I try and read as much as I can. I'm not an avid reader, my wife was, but I'm a reader, and I'm forever trying to, I'm trying to be the best orator of any athlete that's ever lived. That's not a great achievement because, as I mentioned, they're not great orators. But everything you do is a process. It just doesn't happen. It's something you've got to work at and something that takes great patience and a great work ethic. And somebody asked my hero, Winston Churchill, why he was so successful. I'll never forget, verbatim, he said, "The height that great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but while his opponents were sleeping, he was toiling upward in the night." And that's what I did. I hit more balls than anybody else. I exercised harder than anybody else. All these 88 years, and that's what stood me in good stead. I used to go to a dinner, get back at 11:30. I'd go to the hotel manager and say, "Can I use the gym?" "No, it's closed. Sorry. Please, I promise you, I'll lock it up, keep it clean." And I went to gym at that night. See, your body doesn't know whether it's Monday or Friday or whether you're working out or you're not working out. It's always, as he said, whilst your opponents are sleeping, you are toiling up in the night. So the message is very clear. It's abundantly clear that you've got to outwork people if you want to do well.
I want to take a few seconds to talk 2040, the sponsors of this podcast, because to me, they're the epitome of what high performance is for young leaders and decision makers looking to make a mark. So 2040 is a membership community that doesn't just help you accelerate professionally, but it's also helped me grow and develop personally too. By all intensive purposes, this is an opportunity community, and it brings together the next generation of exceptional young talent and connects those rising decision makers to help them unlock their fullest potential through the power of their peers and creating that opportunity for each other. Now, when I joined 2040, I went from feeling alone in my entrepreneurial journey and missing the energy and the ideas and the collaboration of others, to having an endless new source of high quality connections, a super long list of the world's highest performers to interview, which has been epic, and even this partnership that has allowed us to scale the show. All of it's really come from the opportunities presented at 2040. Also, the private events are absolutely legendary. Imagine being able to meet like-minded people at really intimate events hosted by global industry leaders, or even just rocking up to a Friday afternoon WeWork session for a free beer. It's all available at 2040. So if you're on that journey as an entrepreneur or a decision maker in your industry, and you want to be immersed by people like yourself, other rising talent doing the same, going through the same journey and the same struggles, with all the opportunities that provides, go and check out 20:40.org.uk. All the links will be in the show notes, and I bet it will be the best decision you make this year. It certainly was for me. Back to the show. In terms of keeping that momentum and that motivation going, like, did you have a team around you that helped sort of feed into that energy and pick you up when you're on the days that you weren't wanting to train? You must have had a pretty good team around you as well, right?
I don't know. You're speaking like a typical young guy now. I listen to all these pros they play when they sit down and say, my team, I've got a chauffeur, I've got a masseur, I've got my own jet, and this and that. I had a team. We didn't have teams. We had a manager. That was it. It was a different time. No jets. I often went by Greyhound bus. So, and traveled at the back of the aeroplane and went by train all in Britain and carried my own bags and lived in hotels for, you know, maybe £5 a night. So it was a complete, there were no teams at all. And now I get perturbed when I see the guys wasting money on all these things, because it doesn't mean to say because you're making money today that you'll be making it tomorrow. And my advice to young guys are, don't let your managers ever invest your money. Let them make money for you. And don't waste money with unnecessary things, because you've got money today, you might not have it tomorrow. As we've seen, let's take a man like Tiger Woods, one of the greatest players that ever lived. He joined the SEAL Scouts, jumping off high walls and ruined his knees and ruined his back. And then he has this car accident recently. So you never know what's going to happen. All right, he's made so much money that doesn't apply to him. But you never know what's in store for you. And you've got to be very wise in your decisions, very wise. What's good today is not necessarily good tomorrow.
I've been asked to ask you about Mark McCormack and his influence on you and why he was so special.
Mark McCormack was a genius. I first met Mark McCormack. He was making $22,000 a year. He ended up a multi-billionaire. He gave me a couple of sayings that remained with me all my life. And that is, a blunt pencil is better than a sharp memory. He says, nobody can remember. Anybody who tries to remember is a conceited fool. And to write everything down, if young people would only do that, because the time it comes by and goes by and you look back and say, what did I say? What did I do? You can't remember. My brother, who is the leading conservationist in the world and saved the rhino from becoming extinct until the Chinese and the Asian people started coming to South Africa and killing our rhino and taking the horns. He saved the rhino at that stage and sent rhinos all around the world in game reserves. And so he had vision, and he was also the same. You know, he said, write everything down. Keep, he said to me, make sure you keep a diary. And I did not do that. And now I've written something like over 20 books. And it comes to time, you've got to try and remember things. If I could just take that diary and say, here's my ghostwriter. Here it is. It's all here. Well, we live in a different world now, obviously, of conveniency with the phones and the laptops, et cetera, et cetera. It's a different world. But it's vitally important to have a good memory and to write things down, not try and remember.
I think you're speaking directly to me there, because I'm a professional traveler. I'm pretty sure I still forget my pants every third trip I go on. So you've played golf with some incredible people, and you've obviously met some incredible people as well. And obviously your rivals in Arnold Palmer and some of the greats in the game, and also some world leaders as well. Is there anyone that sort of sticks out in your memory as somebody that almost gave you lessons in life?
I play a lot of golf with Donald Trump. And funny enough, he reminds me a lot of Churchill. He's not a diplomat. He gives his opinion when asked. And he does not come across to the average person as though he's got love in his heart, but he does. He's got a family that is so well-mannered, and manners maketh a man, charming wife. His principles, what he's done, we need tough leaders like Churchill to stand up for freedom.
Yeah.
And freedom is dying in the world rapidly. There's so little freedom left in the world today. And soldiers like my brother and the people of Britain and America, these young men, went to war. If you think of Normandy, they went and they fought around the world for freedom, a world that I cherish and appreciate it because I lived in the midst of apartheid. I've seen communism in China. I've seen around the rest of the world what it's like. To live with freedom is a great blessing. And unfortunately, it's crumbling.
Is that what you think drives you still to this day? Because, I mean, your legacy is completely without question, both from a golfing point of view, but also the work you do in the foundations, the golf design, everything you do on a global stage. Like, is that what's still driving you to this day?
Well, very much so. You know, you talk about what drives me. I mean, it's quite interesting at my age where you think, well, I've just traveled in one trip. Most people in their lifetime never do that. Time changes, but I've traveled all my life. But my legacy really, my theory is, yes, I can sit here, and I'm not boasting when I say this, but I'm the only man that's won the Grand Slam on the regular tour and the senior tour. I've won more tournaments than any man that's alive today. I've won more national championships than Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Rory put together. But my legacy is changing the lives of people due to the fact that I experience what it is like to have nothing. And my company, in one way or another, has raised well over $100 million and has changed the lives of thousands and thousands of people. Just this week coming up now, we're having the Gary Player and Vivian Foundation charity match. We'll make close to $1 million, and we take it into these underprivileged schools and hospitals and people that don't have an opportunity to have clothes and toys, and we help change the lives. And America, I must say, is an incredible country at giving and helping people. That's my joy. If you knock on the door in heaven to get in there, you're not going to get in there by just being a great athlete or a rich man. I think it helps. It helps if you contribute to society, and that's my great joy. That gives me such pleasure to see young people and visit people. I've built schools in South Africa, hospitals, churches, sponsored black golfers, and to be doing that and building aid centers in China, homeless schools, homeless homes. We got the DePaul that I did with the Berenberg Bank right in London. We've taken people off the streets that were sleeping in the streets, and everybody calls them bums. To the contrary, we took these people and gave them the opportunity, and now they're acting and lawyers and doctors as such. If you give people an opportunity in life, but we're quick to criticize people because they're lying in the streets.
On that point, what one ingredient would you have, maybe a bit of advice for other people in terms of being able to make their own small piece of impact with the influence that they have? How do you come up with these ideas and put them into practice?
You know, it comes back to that thing called it. You can't explain why you think of things. The only thing I can explain why I'm a crybaby and why I have a lot of love in my heart is because of what I experienced in my life. Not having a mother. I mean, my mother never saw me hit a golf ball. Imagine you become a world champion and your mother never even saw you hit a golf ball. And to become a world champion at anything is very, very difficult to say the least. You know, competition has always been fierce. Everybody thinks it's fierce today. It's always been fierce. So I can't give you the answers what actually happened. I wish I knew. I'm still in my infancy. I have a friend who's a genius. We're still trying to work out. You know, he said a very interesting thing the other day. He said, a cell phone, we only found out about Wi-Fi 20 years ago, and yet we've been in existence for, a million years, whatever the number is. 20 years ago. He says, your phone won't work without the Wi-Fi. There's a Wi-Fi up in the air. He says, some people get more Wi-Fi in their bodies, which make them excel more than others. Now, I don't necessarily believe in that, but he's talking about scientific fields, which is beyond my comprehension. But he's talking about scientific fields and things that we will find out, you in your lifetime will find out things that we never even dreamt of. As I mentioned earlier, we're in our infancy.
You must have spoken to Jack Nicklaus about this it and come up with some theories. Has he got an input on what it could have been? Because you must have walked into tournaments knowing that you guys had the edge in some respect.
I haven't really sat down at any great length of time discussing it with Arnold or Jack or other players, but I do know Jack always said golf should not be called golf, it should be called patience. And as we know, the old saying that patience is a virtue. How many people have patience? If you stop at the robot just a second longer off its turn green, guys are tonking their hooters at you. You know, if you see you're driving along the highway and a man's going to cross the road, if he waits 10 seconds and lets you go, but no, he's got to zoom out in front of you. The impatience is, unfortunately, impatience overrules patience. And so we got to work on patience. I think enjoying the, accepting the adversity and believing in yourself, I think that's a great asset. A lot of people say they do believe in themselves, but when they get on the first tee at the British Open or the Open, they're not truly believing in themselves. You've got to actually believe. I know when I played Jack Nicklaus in the final of the World Match Play Championship at Wentworth, a golf club which I adore, I'm playing against Nicklaus in the final. The course is long, it's wet, and 12 newspapers unanimously said he will beat me. Well, I beat him 6-4. And the next year, the same thing occurred. I beat him 5-4. I said to him, because he's my best friend, I can tease him. I said, you're lucky we're not playing a third time. This time I'd really give you a hiding. So, you know, it's all a matter of the mind. The mind is the answer. The mind is the answer. Can you cultivate it? To an extent. Is it a gift on the other hand? Yes. Is it it? Yes. Maybe in your time, in time to come. Of course, if you did a survey amongst 10 people, you get 10 different answers. It's not a definite answer. And coming back to why you do these things, everybody has a debt incurred. Anybody who makes money in life must remember that they never had money to start with unless they inherited it, which that's, I wouldn't pat myself on the back by inheriting money, but you still got a debt incurred to help somebody. If it's only just one person, do something to help others in the world, because we all needed help in our lives. I know how I was helped in my life. So that's maybe that's the reason you asked me why I do it, because I was helped to a great extent. Coming along, a helping hand was given to me. And so maybe it's just a matter of loyalty. It's a matter of decency. It's a matter of appreciation and giving back.
You've won probably more times than most golfers would ever even conceive possible to win in your career. Is there one moment or memory or victory that is bigger or more important to you looking back?
Well, as I said earlier, I've won more tournaments than any man alive today. I think that's a feather in my cap. But there are tournaments that are obviously more important than others. And to be the only man on the planet to win the Grand Slam on the regular tour and the Grand Slam on the senior tour. My personal opinion, the Grand Slam on the senior tour was more difficult than the Grand Slam on the regular tour. I was young, I was strong, confident. Now you go on the senior tour after 50 or at 50 and over. And I was just as fit at 50 as I was when I was 25. And I think that stood me in good stead. And I think the work ethic, and what I dedicated my life to being, to maintain youth, energy, patience, all the trials and errors that I went through, it kept my age young through fitness and eating properly. I think that gave me the big thrill to be the only man to do that on the planet.
Gary, before we go, we've got a few quick fire questions. The first one is, one piece of advice you would tell your younger self before starting out?
I would, first of all, I'd use the word gratitude. I think people take a lot for granted. You know, if you look at the world today, how many people have a beautiful shower, a bath, a car, air conditioning, schools, food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So many young people, and I address young people, and I address universities as well, and businessmen, the highest echelon in the world. And my first word I talk about is gratitude. And we must never forget the people in this room are in the 1% of the world. Think about the people that don't have anything. So I'm going to go out there. I'm going to try my hardest because I'm so blessed to have the opportunity. I'm going to do my very, very best. If I'm successful, so be it. If I'm not, I'll come back tomorrow and be successful. Believing in yourself and being grateful that you have the opportunity.
One mantra or belief that has enabled your high performance life?
I think having faith. Having faith has helped me a lot in my life to accept adversity. And, you know, my wife just died. We were together for 72 years. The most incredible wife, what she did for me and my 22 grandchildren and my 6 children and our great-grandchildren. That's something that is very special in my life. Now she dies. Can you imagine? A lot of people feel sorry for themselves. They get depressed and they die very quickly after the spouse is gone, not me. Life is one of the greatest gifts bestowed upon you. So must I now die of sorrow? I did mourn. I have tears in my eyes thinking of her a lot. But now I've got to go on in life. You know, life is full of adversities. And unfortunately, schools purely academically are teaching and universities, they're not giving them the true facts of life. There's so many things they're not teaching them about how to accept adversity, you know, and how to have manners and how to treat people and how to smile when you meet somebody. There's so many things they're not being the elementary things they're not teaching. Now, admit parental guidance is important, but some people don't have parents. So when we go to school, you know, if you go to an Oxford or Cambridge, do they really teach? They really teach people those vitally important things other than educating them along getting a degree? Getting a degree in life is not just academically. There's a lot of other things and a lot of other sides to it as well.
One ingredient or habit that has contributed to your success the most? I think there's probably quite a lot of ingredients and habits that you've used along your time.
Oh, no question. There's just one, having a strong faith. That's the no question, no debate.
And finally, I'm not too sure what I'm going to get from this answer, but what do you go to in terms of music to get you in the mood or get you in the zone or even just to get yourself relaxed?
Very good question. I love music. I love opera. I love country music. Country music's always got a message. I love the Bee Gees. Now, whenever I do a speech, which I do a lot of speeching, when I introduce, I always have the song Staying Alive. That has got a real beat. And what I do is I dance before I speak. And I take 3 ladies out of the gallery and I pick them out and I stand up and I dance with them. So we start off with the right vibe. And I love to dance and I love music. Man, I just love music across the board. African music. Amazing. They got a song called Malema. It's just African music. Look, wherever you go, if you go to Spain, wherever you go, I've got their music. And I just love music. I think that makes you happy. I love the song when they said it was the most appropriate song. Be happy. You got the trouble, you make a double. Be happy. Never feel sorry for yourself. Nobody cares a damn. You know that old song, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. When you're crying, nobody cries with you. Boy, that's such a true saying.
Thank you so much for your time today, Gary. I'm just thinking about how much gratitude I have for your time today because I probably haven't warranted this hour of your time, but I know that your words today are going to help so many people in my network and listening to this podcast. So thank you for the work that you do with your foundation, the legacy that you've left, and just how you show up in the world still today. It's so inspiring. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And we must never forget that the youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. We've got to educate the youth for the future. And secondly, I love Britain. My whole family tree's from Britain. My fondest love to Britain. Take care.